The Athletic.
Hi there, this is From the Rookery End, a Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic, and this is Adam Leventhal, the Watford correspondent for The Athletic, and alongside me this week is Mike and Dave, and we are going to get stuck in to a three-pronged agenda for you all this week. What needs to change after Liverpool as we head up to Goodison Park? We're going to be talking about the thorny issue of Ben Foster and YouTube, and we're also just going to be casting our minds forward to January and February, and not necessarily dealing with the transfer window, or that is part of it, but we're going to be focusing on the Africa Cup of Nations. And within that, we are going to be going through some of your questions as well. Thank you very much for sending them in on social media, at Adam Leventhal on Twitter, also on the Athletic app as well. Thank you very much for getting involved in that. And before we get stuck into everything, just a quick reminder for you. If you want to subscribe to The Athletic, you can get a 33% discount at the moment by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend. Right, Dave, Mike, it is great to have you with us. And just so people know, we're not necessarily in the same room, but we can see each other's faces. And I've got a sort of a positive, smiley face. Dave's putting on a smiley face. And even Mike is sort of feeling warmed just by seeing other Watford fans. And just, I can see a smile on your face as well, Mike. Let's start with you. It's been a tough week, but are we feeling a little bit more optimistic in any way that you know that we are going to be heading in the right direction in some way, shape or form?
I feel sorry for you, Adam. I'm not sure how old you are, but you still don't know the difference between a smile and a grimace. Am I feeling positive? Look, I'm looking forward to another Watford match, because as football supporters, ultimately that's all we've got, isn't it? Is the next game and the hope that comes with it. I'm going up to Everton because no one would buy my ticket or my train tickets off me after Saturday. I'm looking forward to it. From a supporter's point of view, Saturday 3 p.m. is what we all look forward to, isn't it? But I have to say, I'm finding it very, very hard to shake off the film of dust, if you like, that sort of envelopes me after Saturday. I found it difficult. I found the two games before it difficult, and I found the backlash. The backlash is probably the wrong word, but the sort of collective sort of shoegazing, if you like, and the collective sort of upset since Saturday, quite difficult to shake off. So on one hand, yeah, really looking forward to seeing Watford in action again. But yeah, it felt like a slog this week when it's come to thinking about Watford.
Yeah, imagine having to write about it and get the criticism coming the other way as well. It has been a pretty sort of full-on week, but I'm sort of feeling like, no, come on, let's just remember this is a game and we are supposed to be in it to enjoy it. Yes, we live it. Yes, we do. Of course we do. And it means a lot. But let's try and just rise above it and look at some of the positives ahead. Tristan R. on the app, Dave, said this: after such a poor show, the Foster shenanigans, which I said we will go into, is there anything positive that we can hang our hat on? Are you feeling that there is anything that you saw within that Liverpool performance that we can kick on with, grasp onto, and head to Goodison Park with some positivity?
I think if you want to cling to some green shoots of hope, which I know John did his very valiant best to try and do on Saturday in the immediate aftermath and got absolutely nothing back from Mike on that front. Put the result aside, because we're probably always going to lose that game. Hard as it is, put the performance sort of, you know, get over the fact that it was a desperate performance. And the positive could be the fact that Ranieri had that game to look at those players, to see them in action, under the spotlight, on TV, against one of the best teams in the league. And he will have learned some lessons. As we spoke about after the game in the podcast at the weekend, the people that did come off the bench, even though we were 4-0 down at the time, and it's easy for them to perhaps look good in those circumstances, but João Pedro, Jeremy Ngakia, the two really for me, you know, cleverly came on second half and did what he does and I don't think he can really be blamed too much for the defeat, really. But I think Pedro and Ngakia are the two that impressed, gave us something a bit more, looks more up for it, didn't look scared, which is what most of the other players look like. So I would like to see those two and more changes, but definitely would like to see those two rewarded and put into the first team for the game against Everton.
I think if there is a positive as well, I think what we should see fairly quickly is whether there is going to be any sort of reaction and how likely it is that we're going to be able to turn this form around. Because what one thing that really stuck out for me during the game on Saturday is when I think it was Kuchka had a shot from distance on about 70 minutes, was it? Finally got a shot on target. Maybe even the first shot. Yeah, first shot after 70-odd minutes. And the usually pretty placid, forgiving Vicarage Road crowd sort of erupted to a man, child and woman into sarcastic cheering and applause. And, you know, it was funny. Liverpool fans laughed and I think Klopp had a little giggle as well. But that's pretty damning, actually. That should be quite embarrassing for a football team to have 20,000 people effectively doing a football crowd version of laughing at you. I think you said one of your colleagues at The Athletic, Dave, called it the one of the worst performances he's ever seen. You have to go along with it in terms of how timid, insipid and utterly hopeless it was. And hopefully those sort of ironic cheers will have been ringing in their ears as they trudged off. And you'd like to think that this week they've been working their tails off to try and come up with some sort of reaction. So I think if there is any positive, it's that we'll see quite quickly on Saturday at Goodison how up for the fight these boys are, because they should, if nothing else, be shamed into some sort of performance up on Merseyside this weekend.
As I put it in the piece that I did after the game, Watford were as ugly as you can get. There were no real redeeming factors. There was key errors made by Ranieri in terms of his selection. I think we all agree that the Messina, Danny Rose, let's play two left backs, but actually if we are going to play them, let's play them the wrong way round. Playing Sarr as a striker, still not playing really a holding midfielder that wants to play with the ball. They are all mistakes that cannot be repeated. It will be very, very interesting to see, as you've both mentioned, whether that key bit of mitigation, which we can't really judge until we see how they perform against Everton, of not having his full squad together until the Thursday, whether that does actually hold any water. Because if it doesn't, then it will come down to, hold on a minute, you've sent them out against Liverpool with a half-baked plan, which they haven't executed. And Moussa Sissoko said it in his post-match interview with the club as well. He said, we went in with a plan and it didn't work. If you then come up with another bad plan against Everton, that really is on Claudio Ranieri. And you're almost thinking, well, hang on a minute. You've brought in someone who's supposed to have a far more astute technical ability to set up a team and get them organised and all this sort of stuff. Because previously you had a rookie who wasn't really up to the level. This cannot be another mistake at Goodison Park. So it is going to be fascinating to see if he has learnt his lessons. And fingers crossed, having sort of hit rock bottom, the only way is up. And hopefully that he will be able to put a side out and maybe change in the personnel. I think he probably needs to do it just to give a few people some rockets. Or maybe he might just go out to the same guys and go, look, you know how pathetic you were last week. Prove me wrong. Otherwise, you are, like Messina last week, you're going to get hooked at half-time. There are a couple of questions that we can deal with. And I think a lot of people have focused this week, and I think that this is the wrong thing to do at this time, focused a lot on the recruitment. I understand that there has been so much focus on the defence, and a lot of people have been focusing on the level of investment in the defence. But I think that people are having slightly short memories because they're forgetting where we have literally just come from. We've come from the Championship. We were managing to keep hold of a couple of players that were part of that defence when we went down. They didn't leave. Maybe they were Championship level. That's up for debate. But there were players added in the Championship who had aspirations to play at a higher level. The likes of William Troost-Ekong, the likes of Francisco Sierralta. You then add to that Danny Rose, who, in my personal opinion, I think he probably needs a couple of games out of the first team. And I think that they should bring someone else in altogether. Maybe play Kiko over on the left-hand side and bring Jeremy Ngakia on the right-hand side. We've seen Kiko do it on the left before. Maybe that might not suit him. It might not suit anyone.
I feel a bit sorry for Rose, though, Adam. You make that point about he should be out. He had a mauling against Liverpool. And, you know, I had a few people message me after the game saying, Danny Rose, I haven't seen him play for a while. Christ, what's happened to him? But they haven't seen the performances before that where he's been playing well and he's looked composed on the ball. He's looked experienced and he's looked like he's improved and he's getting back to somewhere approaching his old self. I don't think we can really chuck him out of the team on the basis of being played in an unfamiliar position against what is arguably the best player in the world right now. I sort of see where you're coming from, but Rose is not the issue for me in the defence. The issue, again, it's not their fault. It's not the defender's fault as such, but the issue is that we're still playing most of the defenders that got us relegated.
And Adam, you talk about the opportunities or the options we have to mix it up, and quite frankly, none of them fill me with any sort of confidence or excitement. It really does feel like rearranging the deck chairs on a famous ship, really. And yes, we take the point that they did bring in Troosti Kong. Sir Alta was a huge success in the Championship, and we were all, I think, well, I certainly was excited to see him in the Premier League. He looked like he was a Premier League operator, didn't he? Danny Rose came in with some experience, but the reality is that we find ourselves desperately short. Whereas in midfield, we're still struggling in midfield and attack, but we have got plenty of options there. And it seems to be, and I think that what people would point to, Ad, is, myself included, is that over the course of the Pozzo regime, if you want to call it that, defensive recruitments don't ever seem to have been very, very high on the list. And having sort of been assured that we learnt lessons from our untimely departure from the Premier League last time, striking it lucky and bouncing straight back under in a very difficult season, that we'd sort of learned from some of our previous mistakes. And you just look at that back five that took to the field against arguably the best team in England or Europe on Saturday, and it's like we just miles and miles and miles out of our depth with that defence. Jeremy Ngakia has proved himself to be an able defender. He looks good, he looks competent. But for him to be the sort of the one saving grace, if you like, to come in alongside Danny Rose, who's, you're both right, he's obviously struggling from time to time, but I think he's been one of Watford's better performers back there. For those two to be the ones that we're really hoping everything is going to turn everything around, I think is quite telling and quite damning, really.
Look, I completely understand, and I'm... It sounds as if I've taken a position where I'm championing the deep quality that we have in our defence. That is not what I'm doing. My point is, I don't necessarily think it's all on the individuals, on the personnel. I think it's two-pronged. The organisation of them as a unit, I think, is hugely important. I also have faith that players can be improved if they have better organisation and they gain confidence from that. But also, I think that in general, the fact that it is all on the defenders, they're getting pummeled and pummeled and pummeled. It's all on them. Every mistake, every missed pass, everything's on them. That is more reflective for me of a team that is not functioning. They are not able to get the ball from the defence any further than the defence. If they fling it forward, it's coming straight back. If they pass it, there's no one there to pick it up. So the team needs to function far better, because it's always going to come back on the defenders. They're always going to be exploited. Yeah, yeah. So that's where it needs to change. You look at Kiko Femenia. Since he's come back from injury, he's looked like he doesn't want to be there. That's my opinion. He just hasn't looked like he's engaged. It was accentuated against Liverpool because he didn't have Ismaïla Sarr, and he was thinking, I haven't even got Sarr alongside me. What the hell am I doing here? The Rose Messina thing was just a complete mess, and that set the tone for the afternoon. And I don't think William Troosti Kong and Craig Cathcart could have really done any better in the circumstances, in that situation. Because also, every time a pass was pinged out from Troosti Kong or Craig Cathcart, it was coming straight back. None of the midfielders were on the half turn, were willing to take the ball forward, were actually willing to go, you know what, thanks for that pass, I know what I'm going to do with it. There was none of that. So it was always coming back on the defenders. So that's where I think people need to just maybe just take a little bit of a step back. I don't think this is all on the recruitment. They're not. It's not like you've got League One defenders in the team. You've got players that are playing international football that they can be moulded and they can be improved. So I don't think, in terms of the defence, it needs to all be on recruitment. And in terms of the general point about recruitment, we haven't had long enough to make a judgment on whether the recruitment this season has been good or bad. We had to wait for the entire season 2019-20 to make a judgment and go, you know what, the Welbeck signing probably wasn't the right thing. Craig Dawson wasn't the answer. We should have strengthened elsewhere. We make that assessment then. We can't make the assessment on the recruitment here and now. We can't because we haven't seen enough of the players in a lineup that might work.
I have this concern that you look out there on the pitch on Saturday, the week before that, the week before that, and you see 11 blokes. You see 11 vaguely talented footballers who have managed to get themselves into a Premier League football team. You do not see a team. And that's been the case really for vast swathes of the last two or three seasons at times. And that's, I think that's where the overall concern comes in. So I think on one hand, yeah, we're only 8 games into a Premier League season. There's plenty of points to go for. There is talent in the squad. There absolutely is. But on the other shoulder is that nagging voice saying, we've kind of been here before with a team that doesn't look up to it. And does it look like we're learning the lessons? And people have rightly spoken about Scott's words. We spoke to him at the start of the summer, and he was very clear and very persuasive, as he always is, saying that this is. And I don't mean that in a negative way, by the way. But we've learnt mistakes. We're going to look to build a young, hungry squad. And I understand supporters looking out over the Vicarage Road turf, over the Elland Road turf, and wondering what happened to that plan.
Maybe me being in your mere presence, Mike, is dragging me down a touch, and I'm starting to be a bit overly negative. But the fact is, we've got a game against Everton in a few days' time. We need to see a better performance. We need to see, hopefully, something different in terms of team selection and team shape. There is an opportunity, perhaps, for us to get some points at Everton, because they're not having the best time of it at the moment. They've got a lot of injuries. It was a shame for me to hear about Abdoulaye Doucouré's foot injuries, broken his foot. He was in the form of his life. Everton fans loving him, saying he's one of their best players, and now he's going to be out for a few months. It's good news in the short term for Watford, but, you know, I'm fond of him for what he did at Watford, and that's bad news for him. But Calvert-Lewin's not been playing recently. He's had injuries. Richarlison wasn't playing last week. He's had a niggle as well, I think. So we don't know whether those two will be fit enough to play, but if they're not, then that gives us a big chance. So, you know, we're going to Everton, who are not perhaps at the absolute best version of themselves at the moment. But, you know, this Rafa Benitez, his teams are never easy to beat. He's forged a career on having a plan about what to do about the opposition. Ranieri will have his work cut out for him. We can't burn too many more games. You can excuse a hammering against Liverpool because they're Liverpool. You can't. If we get the same performance that we had against Liverpool and we lose, it becomes harder to sort of justify, doesn't it?
Just on the Everton side of things and the team news and stuff like that, I got in touch with Paddy Boyland, who we've had on the show before, just to sort of check in on the team news. And he said that Richarlison does have a chance. Dominic Calvert-Lewin will not be playing. Obviously, as we've spoken about, Abdoulaye Doucouré is a massive miss for them. And it opens up a question on who replaces him and whether they can, you know, stick with the same setup due to the fact that he was covering so much ground for them. So it is a big issue for Everton. Yerry Mina, who scored, I think he scored a couple of goals in a couple of minutes for the last time we played from corners at Vicarage Road in that really, really annoying game when we lost in the last minute. He potentially might be back, and he hadn't been playing because he played a couple of times for Colombia during the international break. So that might actually boost them in terms of their strengthening in central defensive positions. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Everton. We mustn't forget as well, Nicolas Nkulu, who Watford have signed, and yes, he is another free agent, etc., etc. He might come into the mix. We don't know. We'll find out about that later on today when we speak to Claudio Ranieri. But I think just to finish this point off, and you know, we've We've dealt with a lot of the questions. Django asked a question that we've dealt with. Steve Maguire about Saar. Robert Nichols had asked, you know, how long do we give Claudio Ranieri? I think that's a little bit too soon to be sort of saying, oh, yeah, he's only got a couple more games. You know, basically, and this is how I finished the piece that I did after the game, that yes, and this touches on the point that Mike was making, we need to find some sort of identity, even if it is a short-term identity. We did it last season, let's not forget. From Bristol City onwards, we found an identity, we found a unity. And Watford's way of doing things is short-term. I don't see that changing. I don't see us emulating the likes of Brentford anytime soon, because it is a lot. It's a short-term operation, but they need to find some sort of identity in the short term, and hopefully that can maybe bear fruit at Goodison Park, or maybe in the games to come.
We need momentum, don't we?
Not even momentum. We need just a wall to stop first, and then we can get something from that. We need something to start off with. A foundation stone. We can't get momentum if it's just all coming the other way all the time.
We need a pair of jump leads. That's what we need to get them going in the first place. And then we need a new battery. Exactly. And then we need to fill the car up with petrol. Then we need momentum. Then we need to keep going. Yeah. And the beautiful thing is, what is giving me a little bit of a positivity in a bizarre Mike Parkin side of ways, we've never ever won at Goodison in the league. I don't think we've won there at all, actually, in any competition. So what would be more Watford-y than going and against all odds, breaking the Premier League record and losing 13-14-0 at Goodison on No, we might win. We might win. We've never won there. So let's... records are meant to be broken, aren't they?
Right. We've started off positively and we've sort of dragged ourselves right back down again. Let's deal with some other topics.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
Okay, let's deal with the Ben Foster situation. I think that the Ben Foster situation has become a little bit of a storm in a teacup, perhaps, but it has got a lot of people talking, and I think it's important that we do deal with it. I wrote an article on Monday on The Athletic, which you can go and read, and you can comment on it, like many other people have commented on it. Some people have liked it. Some people really did not like it, and they really don't like me after that article, which I want to deal with in some form. Obviously, the inspiration for the article was that there was an incident at Vicarage Road on Saturday, whereby one of Ben Foster's guests, a UFC fighter who was a Liverpool fan, got kicked out of the ground, and he was pretty obnoxious as he responded to that, basically saying, you know, I love Ben Foster, but I hope you all go down. He went into an away home pub and all that sort of stuff, and it just got all a little bit messy. And I think the Watford fans that were in the ground and saw the incident and then found out about the incident afterwards thought, hang on a minute, you shouldn't really be giving your tickets to Liverpool fans. As I point out in the piece, that might just simply have been an oversight, and you sort of give someone a little bit of credit there. And yes, people make mistakes. The reason it went on to the YouTube situation and the discussion, the broader discussion, and this is really important that I point this out, the broader discussion about what Ben Foster does with his YouTube channel whilst he is on Watford's time, and that is the most important thing. And I pointed it out in the piece. Don't necessarily think that everyone grabbed hold of that. That Watford fans have seen their goalkeeper do some great things on YouTube, some really interesting things, but also, is he more interested in what he does on YouTube than what he does on the field? Now, that is a question. It is not a conclusion. It is not questioning his professionalism when he goes out onto the field. Albeit, I don't think he's improving as a goalkeeper. I think he's dwindling towards the end of his career. I think that's a fair comment. I don't think he's as good as he used to be. But I think that there are other things that have been highlighted from his YouTube channel, things that he has done on Watford time, like getting shirts, like finding out about his fantasy football team and things like that, which people might hear and go, look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But we have found out about these things by virtue of the fact that he has this YouTube channel. And it has got people talking. It has got people thinking. It has got people making assumptions, might get the wrong perception here or there, but some of it might be true. Some of the negative things that they're thinking might actually be true. It might actually be a distraction. It might actually go against having a siege mentality if you have someone in the camp all the time focused on what their next post is going to be. Yes, it might only be about breakfast. It might only be about apple crumble and things like that. But if your focus isn't on the job at hand when you're at work and you're always thinking, oh, what am I going to say on my next thing? What am I going to do on this? What am I going to do on that? It can be construed that it might become a distraction. And before I throw over to you guys, because I've sort of rambled on a little bit, but the upshot of the incident regarding the tickets was that the club, and I highlighted it in the piece, they were going to deal with the situation internally. And lots of people have asked about what are the club doing about it. We will only find out what they're doing about it in the fullness of time. If we don't see any more posts from Ben Foster within Watford, Watford's training ground or on the coach and things like that, then we will know that they have acted and they have got serious reservations about it. If it's a word in his ear and say, look, can you just tone things down? Can you maybe read the room a little bit more when he was seen sort of talking to Mo Salah? We don't know the full reasons why he was talking to Mo Salah and things like that. We know that it wasn't necessarily to get his shirt because he didn't have that shirt out on his latest post. It was the goalkeeper Kelleher that he had the shirt off. So it might not have been that he was getting his shirt. All these sort of things, we will only find out what happens down the line. What are what's your take on this as a debate? I have nothing against Ben Foster as personally at all. He's always been very, very kind and very sort of approachable and a good bloke. And he's done some really good things for charity. On the way home from a game once, he helped a guy that had, you know, stumbled out of his way and he was struggling, you know, all that sort of stuff. He's a good guy. And I like the stuff that he does outside of football. I think the cycling stuff is really, really interesting. But I think maybe he's maybe not quite got the balance right.
Yeah, well, I think this is probably a good opportunity for us as football fans to try and we need to do this probably more, not just as football fans, as a society, but that's a debate for another day, is try and detach ourselves from the emotion and the fervour of being a football fan and look at it almost from a human side of things and realise that Ben Foster has managed to build something off the back of a career that he's had to work very hard to make successful. I don't think anyone for one minute would think that he's doing this to disrespect Watford or to disrespect Watford supporters. It's easy to jump to that conclusion in the aftermath of an absolute shooing from Liverpool. And as football fans, we get hot-headed, we get angry, we get emotional. I think with stuff like this, I've seen quite a lot of personal attacks on Ben Foster for this. And I think that's overstepping the mark. I think it's important just to look at the whole thing as to why he's doing it, why he's able to do it, and what the actual impact of it is. And I think if you look at that in that way, you probably might come down on the side of more good than bad, perhaps. But I think the concerning thing for me is, having given it some sense, tried to give it some sensible, detached thought, is that Saturday was a sort of a perfect storm of things going wrong, really, for Foster, wasn't it? And I think the biggest thing for me was the fact that his choice of guests is downright abysmal. I hadn't heard of the guy before. I don't really want to hear from him after. I thought his behaviour was absolutely staggering, to the point, actually, that I thought it might be a stunt. He was saying, oh, why should I be thrown out of the home end for celebrating?
Yeah.
Why should I be thrown out of a home pub for celebrating? I look forward to him protecting me when I go up to a pub in Toxteth and start cheering on Liverpool's opposition because, oh, I didn't realise that you weren't supposed to. Absolute nonsense from him. And I think he probably showed his character in those posts. And Ben Foster will have known that. Ben Foster will have probably chosen him on the back of that to get clicks on his videos, get clicks on Paddy's videos, whatever. He saw it as an opportunity for him to be a good guest. If he'd have sat down and thought about it, thought, I know what this guy's MO is. I know what the likely result from the match is. I know what the likely result from him being in the home end is going to be. He will have known. And I think the fact that whether he thought of it or not, the outcome is the same. It was an appalling lapse of judgment, and it shows that he's not really bothered, because he's either not taking the time to think about what might happen, or he is taking the time to think about what might happen and he doesn't care. So it's just the worst possible afternoon for Ben Foster, because his guest acted like a complete douchebag, embarrassed himself and embarrassed Ben Foster. Foster's let in 5 goals. Foster's got Salah in his fantasy league team. And then Foster's gone out and tried to get the YouTube video out with a fairly glowing recommendation of Liverpool, which, again, detach it. Not that video isn't for Watford fans. It's certainly not for bald, middle-aged, fat Watford fans like me. I don't think I'm the target audience. I think I've seen comments from clubs all around the world saying Ben Foster's doing good stuff for your club. He's getting him in the public eye. So I do get that as well. However, I think that kernel of it for me is the thoughtlessness. That, you know, that's an operation, and that's not even about perception. That's not about even being emotional. That's an operational issue. It could have ruined some other Watford supporters' days if they were in there with their kids next to some Liverpool fan jumping up and down, and he turns out to be a UFC fighter. That's not necessarily what you sign up for a Watford fan going to sit in the Sir Elton John stand. So just a really, really bad lapse of judgment. And I think it shows he's not given it enough thought. And leading on from there, it's like, well, how many other mistakes is he making in the lead ups to it? So if I was Watford, my take on it would be, it's pretty clear now the impact that this can have on a wide range of people, on your reputation, on the club's reputation, on the enjoyment of people attending the game. Therefore, we're going to have to ask you not to do videos on match days or on club property, because I think he, in effect, he's misused it and abused is the wrong word. I don't think he did it on purpose, but ultimately he's found himself in a situation where he's let people down. In the club, outside the club, and us as fans. And I think they need to probably put a stop to it now.
It's a really complicated, tricky sort of issue, this. And as with most debates that we have these days, it very much seems that people have either fallen very hard for one side or the other. And I think that there's valid points on both sides, and it is quite nuanced. I think you are absolutely correct, Mike, in that it was a perfect storm. I wouldn't necessarily say it was a sort of lapse of judgment, really. I mean, what I think has happened here is that Ben Foster has, and his business partners and all that, have grown this YouTube channel, and it's got pretty big now. It's got, by a substantial number, more followers than Watford's own YouTube channel has. You know, it's a huge deal. They're closing in on 1 million subscribers on YouTube, which is a big deal. People could make a full-time living off that if they wanted to. And he's not really, apart from the sort of GoPro thing at Swansea last year, he's not really had any trouble with it. It's kind of been there in the background. People have obviously really enjoyed it. He's obviously gotten a lot out of it. It looks like he's really enjoying himself. It may well have actually helped him enjoy his life as a professional footballer in the latter stages of his career more than he may otherwise have done. So I think there's probably a lot of positives for him, for his mental health, for his enjoyment. And it's probably got, you know, it may well at times, in the good times perhaps, have been a good thing for the other people around him in the dressing room as well. Kind of giving them all something to focus on, bit of a laugh, get involved in something. Yeah, maybe after defeats, it's the last thing you want is a camera shoved in your face or whatever, fine. But perhaps something like this was always going to happen. At some point, something was always going to happen. And perhaps it needed to happen for him to just realise and think, okay, maybe it's got a little bit out of hand here. We've got a bit carried away, excited with all the excitement and the videos and the followers and the clicks. It's quite an intoxicating thing when you put a post out there and you can see people are liking it and it's getting views. You know, despite the fact that he's a professional footballer that's played in front of, you know, huge crowds and for his whole career, he probably be quite an adrenaline rush for him getting this attention.
Let's also not forget that, but I think it's important that we get this in. Another huge positive is what it did for Watford fans during lockdown.
Yeah.
It gave us all an incredible look behind the scenes, which, you know, most of us will have enjoyed. I dare say anyone that watched some of the content, certainly during that season we weren't able to go to games, will have really valued that. And I think it's important to reiterate what you say. He's earned the right to do something that he enjoys because he is effectively an elite sportsman who, and that opens doors, and he's doing something that he enjoys, and I think that is to be absolutely applauded in this life. There is a lot of doom and gloom, there is a lot of misery, there's a lot of worry, there's a lot of upset and heartache. So to see someone evidently enjoy something and to make a success of it, I think is terrific. And you're absolutely right to say that. And I think we have to say that Watford fans over the couple of years will have enjoyed it in different ways. I think you're right in as much as you say this was bound to happen. And I think the disappointing thing is that he hasn't recognised that as the thing has grown and grown and adjusted and adapted slightly. He's been told he can't have the camera in the goal by the Premier League. So he's pivoted to change the nature of the videos, which is having guests. But also you have to make other changes as well as it gets bigger and as there are more offshoots, as there are more moving parts to the whole thing. And I think effectively what it feels like, he personally, and I can't talk for him, he's probably lost a little bit of control over keeping the two things happily in tandem, and we just saw that on
because it's too big to let that to put down now. He can't stop it. It's a proper thing. There's probably people whose living depends on it now. You know, people. I'm sure there are people that work on this, and this is their job. You know, it's for him. It's people have said, oh, it's just a hobby. As Adam, as you correctly pointed out, it's more than a hobby when you do it at work, and your work is the thing that sustains the content. All I think to sort of put a bow on it. And to draw a line under it and move on, I think if Ben Foster, whether that be on a video or a separate post or whatever, acknowledges it, says, look, maybe I got a few things wrong there, apologises for the person who was representing him. It's not Ben Foster's fault that Paddy the Baddie behaved true to type in the stand, but nevertheless he is there as a representative of Ben Foster, so you should take responsibility for his actions and say, look, maybe I got it wrong, maybe I need to just tone it down a little bit or whatever. Just hold your hands up, own it, say I've learned some lessons, but we're still going to carry on with the channel. People enjoy it, I enjoy it, we're going to just watch what we do in the future, that'll be fine. I don't think there needs to be a drastic, oh, you can't do this anymore. I don't think it generally, you know, you can see how annoyed he is when he makes mistakes on the pitch. You can see by watching the videos that he does care. He's a professional. He's training hard. He's cycling. The cycling thing, which started the whole channel off, the cycling has probably made him be able to be fit enough to keep playing at 38 years old and go forward. So we can't just say it's been a terrible thing for him, and we can't be as naive to think that it has a direct, tangible impact on his form. It might sort of subconsciously affect him. I think you're right, Adam, to point out that it does play on your mind if you're always thinking about what's the next video, what's the next video, what's the next video. That is going to occupy some of your mental capacity, and that might in turn have an effect on your ability to train hard enough, ability to play hard enough. I don't know. Only Ben Foster can answer that question. His teammates might have a view on it as well. Maybe they'll be annoyed. Maybe some people love it popping onto the video from time to time. Maybe some people are going, oh, wish he put that bloody camera down. Maybe. All of these things we would like to know more about, but we don't really know unless we're inside the dressing room. But I just think ultimately, if we didn't get beat 5-0 by Liverpool, if we'd won that game and Paddy had still been thrown out and he'd still gone up to Salah at the end of the game, we would not be having this conversation right now. He would not have been battered in the way he has been on social media. You lose 5-0 to Liverpool and something bad goes wrong. The two things overlap. People all of a sudden just go mad and look for something to channel their anger into. And that's the bottom line. If you win matches in football, pretty much everything else gets pushed aside, and it's as you said, Mike, it was the perfect storm, and we'll see where it goes from here.
I'd like to just finally say a couple of things on this. I don't necessarily agree completely about whether no one would have said anything, because I think, and I thought that Mike might say it a little bit earlier on, that this is almost like the straw that broke the camel's back, that there have been concerns over what he has been doing over quite a significant period of time, whether Watford have been winning or losing. There have been things that have challenged the sort of the communications policy of the club that have left them in slightly difficult situations. I go back to the Will Hughes situation. The club weren't saying a word about it. The only appearance he made, aside from him swearing all the time on YouTube, you know, clips, which I personally think was almost like someone trying to tell you in a fun way, mate, can you just stop filming me because I don't really like it. But then it became part of the whole narrative. Anyway, aside from that, the point being that he was the first person to actually comment on Will Hughes and Will Hughes' situation. Oh, don't go to Villa, mate. That's difficult for the club's communications team to actually go, we're not talking about that. Can you not talk about that, please? Because we are trying, rightly or wrongly, we're not dealing with that like that right now. Also, the situation with Daniel Backman. He took it upon himself to start talking about, oh, yeah, effectively, he's been dropped. That's football. He'll get back to it, blah, 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 blah. It muddied the waters, that post. That was after a victory. That was after the victory over Norwich. It muddied the waters. It can confuse things when everyone's not on the same page. And the responsibility of the players, when you are given that freedom, is to be responsible and to double check. And I'm sure there will have been occasions where, you know, communication staff here and there or the hierarchy or whatever would have said, please don't put that bit in or don't talk about that in this thing. But a few things pop up and creep up and here and there. So yes, I agree. I get the sentiment, Dave, when you're saying, you know, if we hadn't have lost 5-0 against Liverpool, blah, 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 it wouldn't necessarily have reared its ugly head. But I think that this is almost a good time, whatever happened, to have just scratched the surface a little bit and talked about it. And it will be down to the club and it will be down to Ben Foster, as you said, Dave, to now just take a breath and see how you react. And then, yes, fine. Let's see how it develops. But I think, you know, I have found the whole thing very interesting to talk about it, to hear people's views about it, to get some quite sort of vitriolic abuse about even talking about it in the first place. I find it all a bit odd. So we've dealt with it. We've spoken about it. And now we will see what happens down the line.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
So one final topic that I just wanted to discuss quickly is the Africa Cup of Nations. And I know we've got another international break and we've got, you know, hundreds of fixtures to deal with before January. But I think it is an important one to talk about because I've done some digging into it. And the piece that has just dropped on The Athletic today is all about the Africa Cup of Nations and when players are actually going to be called up for those international games. The tournament takes place between January the 9th and February the 6th. And I think, and we've sort of spoken about it before, people are going, oh, it'll just be a couple of games in January that they're away for. It's actually longer than people may imagine. The FIFA rules state, and just bear with me for a minute because it is a bit wordy, that basically players have to be released and start travel to their representative team no later than Monday morning, the week preceding the week when the relevant final competition starts, which basically boils down to December the 27th. So the majority, as it stands, of all the African players that are going to be playing in the AFCON, which is around about 40 players, are going to have to leave after the full-time whistle blows on Boxing Day. So it's not going to be, where Watford are concerned, that Ismaïl Assar, for example, or William Troost Ekong, or Adam Messina and Imran Louzer, who are going to be going with Morocco, are just going to miss the games against Norwich and Newcastle, which fall in the centre of January, with those two FA Cup games potentially as well. It may well be that Ismaïl Assar, who is the one that we're really worried about, let's be brutally honest, is also going to miss the games against West Ham and Tottenham. And if, as he did in 2019, just before he joined us, he gets all the way to the final with Senegal, which is a team that obviously includes some other wonderful players like Edouard Mendy, the Chelsea goalkeeper, Sadio Mane, and others from the Premier League. If they go all the way to the final, he might even miss the game on February the 8th, which is the reverse fixture at the London Stadium against West Ham. So it may well be that Ismaïla Sarr and potentially others miss 8 games for Watford. 6 in the Premier League and 2 in the FA Cup if we get beyond the third round. And I suppose it just sort of opens up.
It's a disaster. There's no way other way of putting it. That would be catastrophic to Watford's seasons. We may as well give up and go home. If he's going to miss 8 games, well, 6, let's put the FA Cup to one side. If he's going to miss 6 Premier League games, that is absolutely disastrous, because he is the only player, really. He's the only, I'll put it this way. He's not the only player that can win games for us, but he is certainly the only player that oppositions go into games fearing. And if we don't have him, it's a big, big blow. You know, 2, you can manage. 6 is that is a much bigger problem, isn't it?
It does, however, mean that he's probably unlikely to leave in the January transfer window, which I have to say, as I was watching him sort of limp around on Saturday, whether his mind actually might be speeding towards that Vicarage Road exit sooner than we might have anticipated. I think we all recognise he's going to leave in the summer, but I did wonder if he was going to perhaps start spoiling for move in January. As you've explained, Adam, I think the logistics of what he has on his plate with Senegal, and the way we know he is, to give him fairness, he's committed and professional, isn't he? That's what we've seen from him so far, and he will be taking both responsibilities very, very seriously and will be wanting to do his best for both club and country. So perhaps one, it's a very, very faint, thin silver lining, but that's all we've got anywhere at the moment when it comes to Watford, isn't it? That he probably means it's impossible for him to depart the club in that transfer window, doesn't it?
Just to point people in the direction of the piece, I go through the sort of the various stages of the competition where players might be likely to return if they go out of the group stages and the round of 16, quarterfinals, etc., etc. And there is a caveat in the FIFA rules, which basically says that clubs and associations concerned may agree a longer period of release or, and this is the key bit, different arrangements. So there is a chance that a bit of a push and pull in terms of, you know, politics and diplomacy between the clubs and the nations and CAF, the Confederation of African Football, might actually come to maybe a chance that the players in the Premier League, because they're the only players that are playing, by the way. All the other European leagues have sensibly a winter break, but we pile on more games. You know, there might be a chance that players can leave on January the 3rd, which would make it a little bit more palatable. So have a go reading the piece and it will sort of clear things up for you. It goes through all the other players in the Premier League as well. And, you know that there might actually be a chance of things changing because some big, big players are involved as well. So Chelsea against Liverpool, that falls just as the new year starts. And you can bet that Liverpool are going to want Mo Salah and Sadio Mane to be playing in that game. And Chelsea, obviously, Edouard Mendy as well in goal, who's been brilliant. They will be pushing hard as well. So it might be that maybe Watford's sort of push might not do it, but maybe some of the other clubs might actually do it as well. And there might be a little bit of a better situation. But you can go ahead and read it on The Athletic and much, much more. There's also a piece that's dropping later on this week about Watford and all the other teams in the Premier League and how they approach corner kicks. Doesn't make for good reading, ladies and gentlemen. But do dig that one out ahead of heading to Goodison Park. Well, they have actually got the lowest amount of corners in the Premier League, which is, but even when they get them, they don't really do much with them.
It's not the only metric table with the bottom of either.
No, I know.
Still nutmeg champs, though.
Yeah, nutmeg champs, exactly. Look, the only way is up, ladies and gentlemen. Dave, I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Mike, same to you as well.
I've absolutely just been bathing in your negativity this evening, Lance. It's been absolutely wonderful to see you slowly just inching towards the dark side. I'll save my Star Wars references for next time when it's complete. But, oh, it's been so magical just to feel the optimism just sucking out of you. It's tremendous. See you at Goodison Park, eh?
Yeah, can't wait. Quick reminder, if you want to subscribe to The Athletic, moving on, do go to theathletic.com/rookeryend and you can get 33% off your new subscription and it would be great to have you on board. Ladies and gents, enjoy the weekend. Fingers crossed for a better performance and there will, of course, be a reaction podcast afterwards. Mike is at Goodison Park and everyone will be back. to just pull it apart, and maybe there might be some positive news off the back of that game on Saturday. Take care, everyone. All the best.
The Athletic.